Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're getting back into a conversation that we've had once upon a time. We are talking a little bit around, open source. It's a little bit of a technical thing, but you actually don't realize how many open source platforms that we actually encounter on a daily basis. I believe one of the easiest ones, or the one that a lot of people know, is the Firefox browser. And that one is an open source platform, or it is based on open source technology. And for today, we're going to be talking to a firm that actually specializes in making solutions from that. And on the line, we are joined by Dion Harvey, who is the general manager for Sub-Saharan Africa at a software firm that is Red Hat. Dion, greetings to you.
Hi, Mudiwa, and nice to chat to you again, and greetings to the listeners.
This is not the first time that you and I have chatted, but for those that may not know Red Hat, some insight on that front?
Yeah, thank you. So Red Hat is a software company. It's a multinational with its origins in the United States, like many software companies, I suppose. These days, Red Hat operates around the globe. And I think what makes Red Hat unique compared to many other software vendors and software development companies is that all of our software is developed using the open source methodologies that you mentioned earlier. So all of our products come out of the engineering philosophy of and culture, in fact, of the open source movement.
When we say open source, what does that actually mean? I think, from my, I'm going to call it a rudimentary understanding, it's that the code is the base code for a particular thing is available to the public, and it tends to be inspected or verified by a community of people that just make sure that something keeps working as it should.
Yeah, so I think the first thing to understand about open source is that it doesn't necessarily only apply to the software world. In fact, there are some really interesting examples of open source in other industries. But in a nutshell, there is the world that we can call proprietary, where intellectual property, be it software or other, things are being developed. And that intellectual property remains the property of the company that developed it. And they keep that as their intellectual property. It's not available, the code or the elements that are part of that technology are not made freely available and open to anyone. And that's part of their philosophy of how they build technology or products. The open source concept is completely opposite to that. In the open source world, all elements of the technology or the software that are developed is open. It's open to basically the world. It's open to anyone who wants to use that, and they can use it. They can contribute back into it so that it can be improved, and all of that collaboration is part of how the product or the technology develops. And there is a whole culture and philosophy around open source that supports that, to make sure that it's done in a way that is obviously done with governance, etc. But to give you some examples of how open source is not just a software thing, I think it's back in 2014, Elon Musk actually open sourced all of the intellectual property around the electric cars that they'd done. And of course, in his mind, the reason for that was not about, his philosophy around Tesla was not to just compete with other manufacturers, but rather to accelerate the adoption of clean technologies and bring electric cars to the world. And I think that talks to an important part of open source is that it is at its heart, it seeks to not only develop and share technology or code, but it's about changing the world and for the common good. And that's why the sharing is such an important aspect of what makes open source such a fantastic thing.
The last time that I remember, you know, you and I spoke, one of the things was just around how companies in South Africa, you know, have started exploring open source technologies as a sort of a basis for developing their own in-house solutions. So could you talk to us about what that journey, you know, has been like in the local scene?
Thank you. Yes. So, you know, talking more specifically to open source and software, you know, I don't know how long ago I would have to go back to get to a point where open source was certainly not considered mainstream as a choice for companies when they made their decisions about what software they wanted to use. That's certainly changed now. Open source is now, you know, by and large, I would say most companies first consider whether or not what they're looking for their software requirements can in fact be found in the open source world. And there are a couple of reasons why they are doing that. And it's a global trend, certainly, but it's just as relevant in the African context. I think there are a couple of reasons why. I think that organizations, enterprises have seen that open source as a philosophy certainly drives innovation faster than closed or proprietary models. I mean, it's a simple concept. There's just so many more brains on the task, if you know what I mean. And so there is a lot of accelerated innovation that is happening right now in the cloud and in other aspects of the IT world, largely driven by open source. And so open source has become known for being a catalyst for innovation. But I think there are one or two other reasons why organizations are using open source more and more. One of the other important reasons, of course, is the commercial model. The commercial model around open source is fundamentally different to the old world definition of I buy my software and I own it and it sits on my asset registry. In the world of open source, certainly in paid for open source, like in the case of Red Hat, the commercial model is more around what we call the subscription. So you can use our software 12 months. If you don't see the value in it, once that period is over, you don't have to. So it's more of an on-demand, dare I say, almost consumption-based model. And we can see how the IT industry is shifting away from I buy it, I own it, I run it, more to a on-demand consumption model that we are seeing is such a prevalent trend in many aspects of our life around how we use things today. So that's another important aspect. But in our context, I think one of the things that's really interesting is the whole aspect of skills. We know there's a massive skills shortage, not just in South Africa, but right across Africa. And what open source does that I think talks to that is because the code is open, and frankly, developers love open source, developers love cool code. The whole notion of how we as a continent in South Africa can attract and develop skills means that the community aspect around open source, the way people work together irrespective of which companies they may be employed at, the access to software for young people who are busy learning and growing their skills, and of course for companies who want to employ top skills, open source and people who understand open source and who are skilled in it has become a very attractive phenomenon.
And one of the big things that then comes up is, you know, that security issue, as you're saying, more companies are taking it on as a bit as mainstream. You know, I think that's the best way to put it. Are there any security concerns that people have when it comes to open source as a whole? I can imagine that if you're a corporate in South Africa, and I'm a CIO, I guess over the years, you know, firms such as yours have done a lot to allay some of those fears. But are there any concerns that do come up when it comes to, you know, open source, I guess, on a number of fronts? Firstly, if some of the code has been, taken from, let's say, GitHub or something, does that open up a company to perhaps potential vulnerabilities if someone knows how to exploit it? How does the intellectual property work? Or am I overthinking all of this stuff?
No, I don't think you're overthinking it. And I think the first thing I would say is all software has vulnerabilities, and all software also has bugs, by the way. I think that's true both in the proprietary world and in the open source world. After all, it's humans that have developed the software. I think what's different, and by the way, I think I would also say that there have been a lot of misconceptions about this, and that in fact, there has been some dialogue, and I won't necessarily say that it's been perpetuated by proprietary companies, but there has been dialogue that suggests that open source may not be as secure. I would argue that it's actually completely the opposite. The fact that the code is open means that any vulnerabilities or intentional creation of backdoors or anything like that is open for scrutiny by anyone. So in the open source world, I would say that bugs, vulnerabilities, etc., are found sooner, fixed faster, because there is nobody who can't access it and look at it. In the proprietary world, it's almost, in the proprietary world of software, it's like buying a car and you're never allowed to open the hood to see what's underneath the in, you know, under the hood. You're not allowed to look at the engine. You're just not allowed in there. It's super secret. Whereas in the open source world, it's open for inspection. And so generally speaking, vulnerabilities are found faster. And I think one of the examples that talks to that is the robustness of Linux, which is probably the greatest example of success in the open source software world is Linux. And Linux is generally regarded as super stable, less susceptible to vulnerabilities and hacks than other proprietary software. And I'm generalizing, of course, but I think that has been a perception of the past. Today, I think it's generally accepted that open source is not only not what it was thought to be, but in fact, in many cases, can be more secure because of that phenomenon of the many eyes.
As Red Hat, when it comes to the, your place in the open source world, do you guys, is there a certain speciality that you guys have when it comes to your use of open source? When clients come to you, what are they coming for specifically? Is it for, solutions across the board, or are you guys, specializing in using open source for, particular applications such as cloud or networking?
Yes, so certainly we do have some specializations. I suppose the part of our business that we are most famous for, and in fact is the origin of the company, was the Red Hat Enterprise Linux operating system, which is, way back in 1993 when the company started, that was the primary product. And I think we all know, you talked earlier on about how pervasive Linux has become in the world today. Today, Linux is running on everything, right? Our TVs. Some of our fridges with it on, even the little helicopter on the Perseverance rover that just landed on Mars, the operating system was Linux that was running that. So that is at our heart, Red Hat Enterprise Linux. But our product portfolio has evolved over the years, and today we are very strong in technologies that support cloud and cloud computing. And certainly application development for the cloud, storage, and other elements of automation and management that go with all sorts of the aspects around the cloud and applications running in the cloud. And that's certainly the future of the company is in that world. And that's very, very much where we are as an IT industry, is that big shift to cloud, as you may know.
And when it comes to that shift, over the years, how have you seen, I guess, the evolution of your own business? Because I'm sure you get this question a lot, but COVID-19, the pandemic, all of that, how has that, I guess, impacted your business. We hear a lot about digitalization and the fact that the pandemic has done a lot to accelerate the adoption of a lot of technologies. Has that been the same when it comes to, I guess, your own business demand for people wanting the type of solutions that you guys are creating?
Yeah, definitely. I think I stand here today very grateful to be not only in the industry, but in particular in Red Hat. We've had a successful year, a very successful year last year in a world where a lot of industries haven't. And I think part of that, a large part of that stems from what you talked about earlier. Before COVID, I would say things like digital transformation and innovation had become almost a buzzword and an assumed part of what companies thought they needed to be doing. I think when COVID hit, it was a bit of a wake-up call for many. Some companies were perhaps lagging in their advancement around the use of disruptive technologies and how they made their company more available to their customers, shall I say. And some of our customers were more advanced in that. But, you know, we've been having a very successful business for many years now, growing faster than the market, certainly. But COVID changed a few things. And I think the first thing we noticed was that for some of our customers, it was about assisting them with really practical things like automation of tasks that perhaps weren't as easy now that the whole workforce was sitting trying to do much of the tasks they would do in the IT environments, but now they were trying to do them from home. And so we saw some demand from that. We also saw some demand for customers who were very innovative in their thinking and realized that this opportunity or that COVID offered them an opportunity to rapidly transform perhaps how they were interacting with their customers. And so there was demand around that as well. A year later, and we kind of are a year later now here in South Africa, I think what we're also seeing now is a bit of a change. Some of our customers are focusing a little bit more now on just being resilient, if I can say that, and you know, not knowing how long this will all take. Some customers have less of an appetite for innovation perhaps, and some are still innovating, but there's definitely a need for that resilience, and that includes then the ability to manage and automate things remotely, and have robust, secure platforms that you know, that they can operate with without the risks that COVID has introduced through the way that we have to work.
For you guys, where have you seen, I guess, the greatest demand? You don't have to tell us specifically, you know, the clients or projects, but what type of projects have been popular?
Well, look, I think, so first of all, my team and I look after the whole of sub-Saharan Africa, and I think we almost have two different things happening. There is still a lot of demand for Linux and enterprise Linux in many of the African countries, where there is still a lot of data centers being built and a lot of new IT projects happening. And that's not necessarily always the case, but in some countries like South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, where we see more advanced markets perhaps compared to others, the shift has been towards embracing the opportunity that the cloud brings for a change in how we use technology. And of course, we have a fantastic set of technologies for enterprises who want to move some of their technology to the cloud, and that's where things like Red Hat OpenShift, which is cloud-centered technology for applications, is really exciting, because we've got a lot of customers doing a lot of really cool things with our cloud computing platforms and our containerization platforms, and that's, I think, where the future is, and that's where a lot of the newer projects are, and certainly where our growth is.
One of the things that has really made headlines in the last couple of months was the Facebook and WhatsApp privacy policy debacle. Without getting too far inside that specifically, I wanted you to maybe talk to us about what you think, you know, that can I call it that incident, what it has done when it comes to, I guess, increasing the profile of the conversations around open source, simply because on a consumer level, I think a lot of people, you know, like you said, fridges, televisions, you know, a lot of stuff on our phones, all of these things are open source, but the normal person doesn't really know, realize, or understand that that's what they're dealing with. But suddenly, because they're now comparing these different instant messaging platforms, they become aware to say, oh, one is open sourced, one is proprietary. You know, does that then, do you think that then helps to increase that, you know, the profile of open source, and I guess having more enterprises saying, okay, cool, now that consumers understand, you know, open source, we can now, you know, make use more of this technology because it will look like a good thing for us.
Yeah, look, I think the WhatsApp change, if I can call it that, is symptomatic of a shift that we're seeing, not just in the world of IT, but in our lives, as computing and IT become more and more part of you and I's everyday life. You know, 5-10 years ago, the concept of data privacy and security was something that the IT team had to deal with, right? And there they just needed to make sure that their data center was private and secure, and that, you know, sometimes just meant that there was a access control card on the, you know, door card for preventing people from going in and out of the data centers. But things have changed. Things like the cloud, as well as mobile computing platforms like cell phones, etc., has changed everything. And today, security and privacy are things that are now in our homes. And so it's changed the way we have to think about that. Security and privacy today is very much about data, and that means our data, and also the applications that consume and use that data. But I think there's a shift I see a groundswell happening here, going back to, you know, the specifics of the WhatsApp story, where in the past I don't think we have as consumers have been as aware as we should have been, nor have we been as accountable to making nor have we been holding enterprises accountable for what they do with our data. It's no longer good enough to say, really, I don't mind if, you know, whoever knows what I had for breakfast because I posted it on a social media platform. If anybody has seen the Cambridge Analytica story, and now what's happening with WhatsApp, I think we all need to be more conscious and more vocal about what organizations are doing with our data. And if that means voting with our feet, or in this case, voting with your finger on the delete button, then I think we need to be doing that.
As we end off the discussion, I want us to, you know, maybe zoom out once again and just look at the broader industry outside of just open source. But I think it does fit into it, because a lot of the time people have, you know, tended to have their own proprietary platforms, etc., so that they can, you know, charge, you know, licensing fees to people that want to use their technologies and all of these things. So on the issue of, you know, business models, because of, you know, open source, the fact that the code itself is readily available, and then people tailor it to whatever they're doing. Can you talk to us just around how you've seen business models actually evolve over time? You know, subscriptions and annuities seem to be quite popular, you know, right now for businesses, you know, in the IT and, you know, software space. So could you talk to us about that?
Well, I think Red Hat was probably the first and still remains the most successful open source software company in the world. And I think part of what has made us successful is that early on, we were able to figure out how to give enterprises access to all of the benefits of open source software and the open source development methodology without some of the downsides of that. and also figure out how to monetize that. And to give you an example of a downside to open source is if you as an enterprise went onto GitHub and took a Linux distribution to use within your enterprise, you didn't have anybody to call when you had a problem. And so that's an example of good code, but the downside of not having anybody to talk to when you needed help. Red Hat was able to monetize its offerings by bringing to our customers hardened, robust, enterprise-ready versions of that software, and back that with things like support when things go wrong or when our customers needed our help to deploy software or do new things. And with that, of course, was the commercial model where customers would pay for the subscription but wouldn't have to then go and pay for the asset of the software. Because when you buy the asset and you don't like it anymore, or you're not using it anymore, you still own it, right? In our world, if the customer stops using it, they don't need to pay us any more money. And as I said earlier, I think a lot of companies are shifting that way because it suits this whole on-demand world that we live in, on-demand consumption. I may need more tomorrow, I may need less, and I should only pay for what I need. And I think we will see that is a, you know, something that will develop more and more, and legacy organizations will have to adapt their models to suit a model that I think was part of what we were doing from the get-go. And I think customers like that. It's a differentiator for us in the market and other open source companies, by the way. And I think we'll see more and more people having to adapt their whole commercial models, or more enterprises, more software companies, should I say, as to be able to give organizations what they really need, which is basically, I want to only be paying for what I feel I'm rightfully using. I don't know if that answers the question, though.
No, it certainly does, because at least we can see how Red Hat has been able to come up with businesses around the whole concept of open source, providing the support and stuff like that would normally not be available. So for us, on the last point is once again a broad question, because you are someone who's been in the industry for a while. It seems, if someone takes a look back, just before the year 2000, we had the dot-com bubble, the 90s, people, the internet trying to figure out what this thing is. And for, young people in the space, the early 2000s up to 2010 seemed to have been a decade of, you need to be a programmer. Everyone was saying you need to be a programmer. Whereas in the 2010s, it seems as if the shift was, okay, fine, you need to be in analytics, big data. That became, the big buzzword. What do you think is going to characterize the current decade that we're in?
I definitely think it's going to be cloud computing models. We see the rise of the big hyperscalers, as we call them, like AWS and Microsoft with their Azure platform. But I think there is also another shift happening, which I think really excites me. The one of the elements that I think makes open source special and different is that it's not just about selling software to customers. Open source is about a culture. It's about a philosophy, and the openness is the important word here. It's about transparency. It's about choice, and it's about flexibility. One of the things that has plagued this industry for years was the concept of technology lock-in. You've started using my technology, and now I've got you, right? Open source and open concepts like open source mean that we are giving customers the freedom of choice and the freedom of what they do with us or without us. And it holds us to a higher level of accountability when it comes to the way that we support our customers and do the right things with them. So I think that the whole move around open from a cultural point of view and a philosophical point of view is something that I would like to see more of as our industry evolves into the future. The other element of open source and the culture and philosophy around it is that at a local level, I think we have a bigger role to play as the open source movement and open source vendors in things like skilling our youth and being part of helping to make a better society, making software available to schools and universities and giving those people a community to work in so that they can learn, build skills and ultimately find jobs as we grow and innovate within the African context.
So that's been us with Dion Harvey, who is the general manager for Sub-Saharan Africa at a software firm that is Red Hat, giving us some insight into the world of open source software, you know, where it sort of has come from, where it has been, and sort of where it's currently going, and also just giving us some insight into, you know, what it is and what it is not, and also, you know, highlighting, you know, its strengths and I guess some of the possible weaknesses that Red Hat itself has been able to, you know, exploit and actually, you know, build business models around. You know, if you're like me and you're a geek, you know, the last half hour has certainly been, you know, quite a geek fest, quite enjoyable, talking about, you know, all of these different concepts, and especially in light of the recent WhatsApp policy change and it highlighting, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of proprietary versus open source platforms, all of these things that would otherwise, you know, continue just being spoken about in, you know, somewhat geekier circles. So, you know, we certainly enjoyed that. Ending off just talking about, you know, what the decade is likely going to be characterized by when it comes to computing, Dion saying that we're likely to see, you know, the growth of cloud computing as people actually, you know, come to realize the full power of that, you know, coming off the back of data analytics in the last decade and computer programming in that. So thank you so much, Dion.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity. It's always a pleasure chatting to you.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Quite a geek fest there, you know, talking to Dion, and as a geek myself, certainly enjoying that conversation around open source. It's one of those concepts that a lot of people tend to either not know about or overlook, but like you said, this is one of those things that is touching and affecting our lives on an increasing basis. He spoke about the fact that open source code is being used in TVs, fridges, etc. So it means that, you know, more and more of us are coming into contact with open source. But, you know, more importantly is just, I guess, the security factor. When you talk to cybersecurity experts, they say that open source is said to be safer. This is not to say it does not have any weaknesses or that it can't be exploited, but people do tout its safety record because the thinking is that if you have an opening of when I say opening, if you have open software and open platform, you make the code available online, then you have a community of developers that work to just ensure that the platform is working as is, as opposed to proprietary software. People say that the danger with that, if we're going to contrast WhatsApp and let's say Signal, for example, is that because WhatsApp's platform is proprietary, there is a danger that the company itself probably has a backdoor of some sort that they could exploit to actually gain entry into people's messages and all of these things. But outside of that discussion, the open source debate, you know, continues to rage. And like he said, the fact that people are more and more becoming, you know, aware of you know, their privacy means, you know, what type of code was used to make a certain program might start being an issue that people are actually concerned about. I can imagine businesses that are making bespoke, I guess, software solutions for themselves, these are some of the concerns that they might have, and you have issues like Facebook versus Signal helping to, you know, grow the profile of this conversation. Looking forward to chatting with Dion and other experts on open source in future, and particularly the business models that people are putting into place for that, because Red Hat is making custom solutions, but at the same time, they've filled in a gap that was there, where they are offering support for what would otherwise have been a unsupported or supportless, you know, pieces of code. So yeah, that's it, and we just hope that you know, it's one of those conversations that we keep having. So with that, we've reached the end of today's episode. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That is under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. And thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.